This is Patrick Gleason, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast.
Robo fucking cop.
As far as I'm concerned, Bruce Willis can go get a bag of dicks. Get off my shit.
ConfessionsOfAMovieSnob.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast. This is Aaron, and I am joined by the sleep-deprived Ethan. Say hello, sir.
Hello, I am sleep-deprived Ethan. I was told by coworkers today I look like a zombie.
Awesome. And we're apparently joined by a cicada.
Yes.
That's weird.
And, I say if I look like a zombie, then my wife just must look like complete, like if I'm walking dead, she's got to be that half of a corpse that is shambling around in the first episode, you know.
Bicycle girl zombie. Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha. But yeah, it's been, what, 6 weeks, 2 months?
Just about,
Since we've done a podcast. And that wasn't intentional, really, kind of. I mean, I think we knew there was going to be a break. I don't know if we knew it was going to be this long. Because, you know, I started a new job and I got a wacky work. I had a wacky training schedule. I'm off that. And then Ethan had a baby, which is why he's all sleep deprived.
Yep.
So, do you want to fill us in on that?
About a week before it all happened, my lovely wife went to her midwife appointment, and our wonderful little darling baby, Aria, had flipped. So she was breech. Mm-hmm. And she is full breech. And so we scheduled what's called a version, which is you go into the hospital and the doctor and the midwife try to manually turn the baby. Essentially, they grease up her belly and try to turn the baby. Yeah. So we went in on September 10th, Tuesday, September 10th, to try that, and got the baby about halfway, and then she just flipped right back over to there, and which isn't uncommon. Essentially, if the best way to put it is the baby knows better than we do, and if the baby needed to be that way for some reason, whether or not it was that was the only way it could be comfortable, whether or not it was the only way that it could be not be choking itself, then hey, that was it. Mm-hmm. Then on the next day, Beth started having contractions at about 4 o'clock in the morning. And she, at about 7 o'clock, she was taking me to my mother's house because I carpool with my mom. And once we got there, the contractions were basically about getting really regular at about 4 to 5 minutes apart. And so we sat there with my mom. My mom puts her hand on her belly and goes, "Yeah, you're in labor."
Yeah, go to the hospital.
And so we call the midwife. The midwife on call says, "Yeah, I want you guys to go in to be evaluated." We go into the hospital. I won't get into that whole mess because we're not too happy with the triage nurse we had. But anyway, long story short, at 2:13 p.m. on September 11th, 2013, my wife had a C-section, and I got to see my lovely daughter for the first time. And it was an amazing experience, and we have been home for a couple weeks now. Yesterday we were kind of amazed. Actually, today is her 3 week birthday, I suppose, and so we're adjusting well. She's growing, and she's a good kid. She's actually let us sleep through some nights recently, but we're kind of adjusting a few things. So
sure, that's very big of her.
Yes, it's very nice.
Yeah. Very nice of her.
Yes.
You know, now that everything's out of the woods and everything, it was pretty. This whole experience was pretty funny through a text perspective, especially when I'm at work and I don't get to have my phone on the floor when I'm out there doing my thing, and so my phone's in my locker, and so I go to my locker. I think I go at lunch or second break or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there's this string of texts from Ethan. I wish I'd saved them, but I didn't. It was all like, you know, going to the hospital, going to find out. Because he told me something the day before about how they're going to have to do a C-section. And then, and then there was this string of texts from Ethan. It was all like, I think the first one was taking her to the hospital, you know, some, I don't know if he used the word complications, but something like that. And then it was all like, but bearing in mind, I'm reading this all at once.
Right.
So, you know, so it's just all like, you know, Beth's going to the hospital. And then, yeah, it looks like there's going to be a baby today. And then you're all, yeah, she was born, and weighed whatever it was she was born. It was just like a, it was like a weird, you know, like from my perspective, it was just a weird, it was a weird range of emotions and shit to go through, like in a matter of, you know, 30 seconds or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm sure the dealing with it slow and painful and all that stuff was the worst, but it was just a lot to deal with, like, you know, basically picking up my talk box and looking at it. But I'm glad it all went well, and...
Oh, yeah.
It's cool. It's cool. I mean, it's just funny that, I'm sure it feels like nothing to you, but I'm just now getting used to the idea that Beth's pregnant. and now there's a baby, and I still need to go meet her. And the one day that I had to go do it, Rachel is ill, and I couldn't go, so it sucked. But I'll get up there at some point.
It happens. You know, it happens. And you guys are welcome to come anytime. Just, you know, let us know ahead of time.
And I'll bring my Jack Daniels and bring my Jack Daniels. But tonight, we're going to do a show. Disney films for the next 8 to 12 years. And that's just if the kid doesn't get into Disney. Or hey, we could say The Little Mermaid came out on Blu-ray for the first time yesterday. Whatever. I mean, we
can you hear me?
I can hear you.
You cut out for about 20 seconds there. Start back at where it's like, well, what we're going to do today. And that's where you cut off.
Awesome. Okay, so it looks like what we're going to do today is it's a podcast that I hesitate to call it a long time coming, but I think that as soon as we figured out the format of what we do on the show, we had to know this was coming. But we were talking pretty seriously doing this about a year ago, and we decided what we're going to discuss is the Disney films. And we can call it topical because Ethan, you know, now has a daughter, and he is now going to be living off of Disney films for the next 8 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be that. And we can also say because just yesterday, The Little Mermaid was released on Blu-ray for the very first time. So all kinds of topical.
Yep.
However, before we get to that point, we do have to do a little segment that we're going to call Geekly Happenings, news relevant to us geeks. And this is going to be a heavy segment tonight, because we have not recorded in like 2 months, and I do feel there's been some pretty big stuff that's come out in the last 2 months that I want to talk about, and call it a baby gift to Ethan, but I actually kept track of the news because I knew that everything was crazy and, you know, whatever. So I guess it's going to be news relevant to us geeks featuring reactions by Ethan.
Excellent.
Versus the other way.
The tables have turned.
The tables have turned. Now, these are going to be somewhat chronological order. I think one or two of them might be out of order, but I have stuff to happen like literally the night after our last podcast, and I have stuff to happen today. So we're going to be covering some time. So jumping right into it, the first thing that I have, and I don't know if Ethan caught this, but it's something that would be relevant to us, but it was the announcement of the movie A Slight Trick of the Mind. I don't know if you are aware of this or you know anything about it, Ethan.
Nope.
Have you heard of this?
No, I
haven't. The Slight Trick of the Mind is a novel that was written in 1947. It was a Sherlock Holmes novel, and in this novel, it takes place on Sherlock's, you know, bee farm, right? He's been retired for like 50 years, and we're dealing with a 90-year-old Sherlock Holmes, and he spent his time ruined and alone on his bee farm with a case that he could not solve. So he's haunted by this case for 50 years. And so they announced this movie about a month and a half ago. They announced that this is going to be directed by Bill Condon. You might know him as the director of Gods and Monsters. He's directed a lot of other stuff. But the neat thing to me about this is the casting of Sherlock Holmes, and they chose Ian McKellen to play the 90-year-old Sherlock Holmes.
That's awesome.
I don't know about you, but I am fucking in.
Oh yeah,
I am so in. I mean, I love me some Sherlock Holmes. I love me some Ian McKellen. Bill Condon is a great director. And I'd like to see what they're going to wind up doing with like some of the other casting, because I've read the book. It's been a while, but I do not remember if Moriarty shows up. I wouldn't be too surprised if they stick him in there for some stupid reason.
Right.
Because they like to Moriarty-ize everything these days. But I do remember that Irene Adler shows up and Watson shows up. I'd like to see what they do with this. But you know, this is kind of like the first rumblings of the Les Miserables. I'm pretty excited. So we're just going to have to see like, you know, what actually turns out. Hopefully it turns out as well as Les Miserables did. Thoughts on it?
It sounds awesome to me, actually. I mean, I absolutely love Ian McKellen, so I mean, shit, if they're adding him into the long list of people who have played Sherlock Holmes, I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be all like, I'm surprised he hasn't already, because, I mean, he seems kind of perfect. Hopefully he's taking it in a good stride. That I think he's 73 and the casting was a 90-year-old, but that's okay. I mean, but he's an actor, you know. He was like a zillion years old when he played Gandalf, I guess. So okay, now moving on. The next big thing is one that we like talking about movies, but no matter what we do, we always have a comic book bent, and a lot of the things we talk about a lot is comic book casting, and we have a big one. We got a big casting, and it's coming up from the Avengers 2 Age of Ultron. We have our Ultron, and it's none other than James Spader.
Yep.
Not the first person that popped to mind, but it's kind of brilliant. I mean, it really is kind of brilliant. I hesitate to say it's as perfect as, like, Alfred Molina's Doc Ock or something like that. But it never really did occur to me, and it's going to work. I mean, he is a fantastic actor. What was that show that he was on that he won all the Emmys for? Was it Boston Legal?
Or
something like that. He was really good in that. He was just on The Office. He was in Lincoln. I mean, he used to be a...
it was Boston Legal.
Yeah, he was really good on that. He used to be like kind of like the heartthrob, like the all that, like back in the Stargate, late 80s, early 90s.
Early 90s,
now he's kind of plumper and grayer.
I guess early 90s being 1994. I was over at my friend Nathan's house a couple weeks back, and they were watching Stargate, and I was like, "Man, he's so thin and young."
Yeah, I know. He's one of those people that I like him a lot. I like his career now better than I did when he was a kid, but he hasn't aged well. I'm sorry. And neither have I. But, you know, he used to be young and fit and beautiful, and now he's, you know, I mean, he's not ugly, but, you know, he's not as skinny as he used to be, and he's certainly not as young as he used to be. But it's cool. I mean, it does actually strike me as a Joss Whedon casting. It makes sense to me, and it's just kind of cool that it's just like not one of those boring ones. You're like, okay, moving on. You know,
I'm happy with it. You know, I mean, he's got a good distinctive, a good voice, I think. And while it is one of those castings where, like, sort of the Dr. Octopus thing is you wouldn't think of it, but I'm in. You know, I think it sounds like a good one.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of Ultron and Avengers and whatnot, have you watched the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I have. We've watched that's the first television show I have watched live on as it is airing on television in many, many years.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes.
I watched the first week. I liked it. I told Rachel that if I didn't know it was written by Joss Whedon, I wouldn't know it was written by Joss Whedon. I mean, it so feels like a Whedon show. And then I watched last night, and I fell asleep in the middle of it. And don't take that against it. I only slept like an hour and a half the night before. And then I woke up at the end, and Nick Fury was there, and that was weird, but whatever.
Yeah.
It seems like an okay show. I mean, they obviously have to build. They got some intriguing stuff going on with Coulson, you know, how they kind of said at the beginning of it, like, yeah, they just faked it. And they're like, no, they didn't fake it, but they haven't told us quite what's going on there yet. And, like, some of the histories of some of these other people. But so far, it's a good show. I like it. It's all right. I mean, it's not the best show ever. But, hey, what are we going to do? Okay, and let's move right on to some more comic book casting news. And this is one that we've talked about on the show. But it is one that was it was not official when we were talking about it, but it is now official. It is official that Bradley Cooper is going to play Rocket Raccoon in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I don't really think our thoughts have changed on it.
It's good casting, I guess, but I'm flabbergasted that they didn't that they're not saving him for a bigger role. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I keep hearing that the script is awesome and everybody wants in on it. And it's easy to do. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's easy to do voice work, but it's definitely easier to knock out a voice role in, you know, a couple six weeks, 2 months, whatever. versus being, you know, like tied down to a physical role, because he's not going to be in there doing mocap or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, we already talked about it. We both said like we're surprised that they didn't, you know, use him for like a more, you know, heroic, you know, physical role. But you know, whatever. I'm interested to see what he does with it. So that'll be good. That'll be good. All right, Ethan, would you like to talk about the 2014 Academy Awards? We got two bits of news from that. The first being is we know the host.
Yep.
We do know that Ellen DeGeneres is going to be hosting it. We might have talked about that on the show before. I don't remember, so I brought it up real quick. But the thing I want to talk about is they named off the they did name off who's going to get the Governor's Awards this year. You know, that's like the what do you call it? The you know, like the Irvin J. Thalsberg and like just like the Lifetime Achievement, stuff like that. This year that's going to go to Angelina Jolie, Angela Lansbury, Steve Martin, and Piero Tosi. I don't know Piero Tosi. I looked it up, and honestly, I forgot. Obviously, we all know who the other three are. And I do believe that Angelina Jolie is getting a Jean Herschel Humanitarians Award. I believe I read that, and I'm all for that. You know, I mean, she does great humanitarian thing. I don't like her as a actress, but she, and I have said before that, you know, I do like her as a person, and she does good things like that. So, Angela Lansbury to Steve Martin, hell yeah. I mean, Angela Lansbury, you know, she was in the, we know her as Jessica Fletcher from Murder, She Wrote. We also would know her from, what was the name of the teapot she played in Beauty and the Beast? Mrs. Potts, I think. So we got her, and obviously we got Steve Martin. He's an iconic comic, and he's also a previous Oscar host, and a pretty damn funny one, too, if I must say. So that's that. You heard about those?
I have not, actually. I heard Ellen DeGeneres was was on board. But then she hosted, how many years ago was it that she hosted?
It has to be more than five.
Yeah.
I liked when she hosted. I mean, there's been,
I didn't have any problems with it.
She was fine. I mean, and that's just it. I loved Seth MacFarlane. I thought he did a great job. And I thought Anne Hathaway and James Franco sucked. But, you know, like, other than that, I think most of the Oscar hosts lately have been pretty good. And she was not one I disliked. I liked her quite a bit, as a matter of fact. So we got that. Okay, and then we're going to have, we got another one. And again, this is something that we talked about. When we last talked about it, it was in speculation. But the television show, the Breaking Bad spinoff, Better Call Saul, is now officially a go. They have ordered the pilot, and we are getting episodes of Better Call Saul.
And I believe it was greenlit on my daughter's birthday.
It was. I believe I said something to you about that.
You're busy being a daddy, and so I expect you not to respond to this.
Yeah, but I'm fucking thrilled because I love Saul Goodman, and you know, it's a way to get more Breaking Bad. But they've announced that it's going to be a prequel. So there's that. It is going to be a prequel to Breaking Bad. So it's going to be everything leading up to the bus bench lawyer and all that kind of stuff. And maybe we'll get to see stuff like when he meets like Lavelle and QB and stuff like that. So
now is it a prequel series? Is it before Breaking Bad?
Yes, it is a prequel series. Yeah,
awesome.
It's a prequel series. So we get to see all that, and you know, maybe we'll get a chance to. I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll get a chance to see Walter White. I don't know if that really makes sense, considering in the show that he had only just met him that one time, and neither of them knew who the other one was. But
yeah.
Who knows? But it's still cool. It'll be neat to see. I'm fucking in because I'm still dealing with my depression of Breaking Bad being over. We're not going to spoil it. I'm not going to spoil it for Ethan. Ethan hasn't seen it yet, but it's fucking over, and it was satisfying and doesn't make it any less sad. So there's that. Okay, and then another spinoff. We are getting a Walking Dead spinoff, comprised of entirely original characters. Now, I gave up on The Walking Dead. I gave up on it. I gave up on it at the end of season two. I'm just like, this show is boring, and you know, blah blah blah. And honestly, I should have given up on it after the beginning of season two, end of season one. But I think I'm just a little bit more optimistic than that. But Rachel's thrilled to death. You know, she's all about it. And there is speculation about what the show is going to be. And a lot of people think that, you know, they might just do something with Daryl's character, because he is an original character, and so he would fall under that umbrella of all original characters. I don't care. I hope it's good, whatever it is. I mean, I'm not gonna really, you know, flip the fuck out about it or anything. So that's that. I mean, I'm obviously far more excited about Better Call Saul, but I hope the people who love do love The Walking Dead. I missed one. I'm gonna go back to it because it's a little one. But I wanted to talk about Ruthaw's winner, Kurt fucking Russell, has signed on to be the villain in Fast and the Furious 7. Now, the only reason I care about this is I hope he's fucking, I hope he's Stuntman Mike. Because it's a car movie, and, I know it isn't going to work out like that, but that was like my first thought. It was like they announced that he's going to be in the Fast and the Furious 7. I'm like, ooh, Stuntman Mike! And it's not going to be, but yeah, there's that. So, yeah, we got some movement on the Ruthaw's in there. Okay, and this is another one that's kind of interesting. You may have seen this, may or not have seen this, but J.K. Rowling announced a new Wizarding World movie, a movie to be set in the Harry Potter Wizarding world, and she is writing the original screenplay. Now, I guess it's going to be a prequel, but a lot of people are like, oh, fuck that, I ruined Star Wars, and, you know, whatever, I don't care about that, that's not me anyway. But to me, the description of the story sounds badass, because it is set 70 years before Harry Potter shows up at Hogwarts. And if we know our Harry Potter lore, we know Harry Potter showed up at Hogwarts in 1997. And 70 years before that would be 1927. That's kind of like my favorite period in history. But it's going to be based off of the magical beasts and where to find them or whatever it is, the book they're always talking about in the books and the movies and stuff, the one written by Newt Scamander, and Newt Scamander is going to be the lead character, and they say it's going to take place and start in New York. So it's going to be a period movie set in 1927 New York in the Wizarding World. I mean, just that alone, I would read the screenplay. That sounds interesting to me. I mean, like, running all over the world looking for, like, you know, sphinxes and dragons and junk like that. That'd be amazing. So
I'm sure Warner Brothers is happy as pig and shit, just because it's set in the Harry Potter universe, and of course that being having the rabid fan base that it does. I mean, we're part of it, really. We love Harry Potter. This doesn't have a finite ending. You know, this is something that if it takes off, they could just keep churning these out forever.
Oh, sure. I mean, it'd be fantastic. And I hope it turns out cool. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously I hope everything turns out cool. But, I mean, just the premise alone sounds promising to me, because I love 1927. I especially love New York at that time period. And, you know, it's in the Wizarding World. That's all good to me. Okay, and now our news is going to kind of peter off, because I think our best news is earlier, but whatever. Okay, my next is the announcement of the Cecil B. The Golden Globe Cecil B. DeMille Award is going to Woody Allen this year. So, okay, you know, Woody Allen, he's prolific. He's, you know, like him or hate him, he's made his impact, and, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm just kind of curious if he'll show up, because, you know, he always plays a clarinet at some bar on Sunday, so he never bothers to show up for the Oscars and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. Let's see. Little bit, kinda, sorta, maybe, a little bit, topical, but not really. The Disney Company and Jerry Bruckheimer have decided to part ways. Did you see that?
I did not see that. That's pretty relevant. That's huge. I mean,
that's huge.
They're the ones who brought, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff like that to Disney. Yep. It got them a good chunk of lots of money. So, that's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah. They've been together for a long time, and I don't know what it was. I mean, I don't know the guy, but I'm sure it was probably they weren't going to offer Bruckheimer enough money, and he left, and probably rightfully so, because he's made that company a shitload of money. I mean, a lot of money. And, you know, I don't know, but it is what it is. I mean, Disney's not going anywhere, and neither is Bruckheimer. It's just those two are not going to work together any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. And then a tiny little piece of news is and I don't care about it, but I just threw it in here because, you know, hey, it's movie news. But they actually they got the go-ahead to start making the fourth movie in the Chronicles of Narnia series, surprises.
Now, that is not Disney anymore.
That is not Disney anymore. It's not Alcon. It's maybe Relativity. I don't remember. So whoever it is, it is no longer Disney. But they have got to go ahead with that. And I didn't like the books. I saw the first movie and, you know, whatever. And some people seem to like it, so, you know, good for them. And my last little bit of news is the Today News. And it's the thing that I would like to think Ethan might have a little more to say about than me, but it's the death of author Clancy Brown at the age of Tom Clancy at the age of 66. Author of what? Hunt for Red October,
Patriot Games, pretty much the Jack Ryan series, amongst other things. Splinter Cell, Ghost Recon. The guy had numerous things to his name.
And apparently he played Kurgan in Highlander.
Yes.
Tom Clancy. I mean, it's kind of it's totally a bummer. I read, but I don't read a lot of stuff like that, and I knew his name, so, I mean, that's a pretty big author, and he died young. I mean, 66 is like the new 30, I think.
Yeah.
And he's dead now. It sucks.
What did he die of?
I don't know. I was reading through the article, and they said that reps were not immediately called back for comments. Mm-hmm. So it was probably I don't know. I mean, statistically, it was cancer or a heart problem. I mean, we know that. So I mean, I don't know. But yeah, it was just today, and you know, it sucks. I mean, he wrote a lot of stuff, and a lot of his stuff got turned into good movies.
Oh yeah, Hunt for October. Actually, my wife hasn't seen a lot of movies, but I was amazed to find out she had not seen this one yet. So, I think you had to be living under a rock or something to not see this movie. But I also understand that it came out in what, 1990, 91, 90?
Was it even?
Like 89, 90. It was.
Yeah, I thought it was late 80s.
So I mean, she would have been 3 or 4 when it came out.
Yeah. So it is what it is. It's a good, it's a good flick. It's a good movie. It's a real good movie.
It's a great movie. And they're working on rebooting that whole franchise with, Chris Pine as Jack Ryan. So
yeah, that's right. I like Chris Pine. I like Chris Pine. Okay. That's all the news I have. Do you have anything we need to add that I maybe overlooked?
No, nothing that is huge and absolutely must.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let me take a drink. Okay. All right. So at this point, moving on to the main topic discussion. And tonight, like I said in the intro, we decided that we are going to talk about Disney movies. There was a little bit of a discussion between the two of us about what is a Disney movie?
Mm-hmm.
I think at first I said, why don't we just do classic animated? And then I got to thinking about it, and nothing against the classic animated. I love the classic animated, but I decided that, I don't know. I mean, everybody probably has their own definition of what a Disney movie makes, so to speak. And, to me, it was a sense of wonder and a sense of whimsy. And to me, that was not tied down specifically to the classic animateds. And I love the classic animateds. I love the Disney company. But, we decided to open it up to some of the live action stuff. And we'll probably get into what we chose and why. I mean, as far as that's concerned, in the body of this, we did decide to bar, Pixar.
Yeah,
because
one, we've already done top six Pixar before, or top 10 Pixar before. So,
yep.
And there's my wife. I was surprised she hadn't seen Hunt for Red October, and she's surprised I haven't seen Up yet. And so we're apparently going to be watching Up and some other Pixars this weekend at some point. So
there you go. That Up kicks so much ass. I loved Up.
So it will be an interesting dichotomy. We will watch Up and then we will watch Breaking Bad.
There you go.
Upping Bad.
Upping Bad.
If the show ends with him in a house with balloons.
Spoiler alert!
I know, it's completely just...
it is what it is. But yeah, Disney movies. I'm not too cool to admit that I still like Disney movies. Granted, there's a couple of them that have been run into the ground, you know, by both Chloe and myself. But it's just a, I don't know. I mean, Disney means so much more than any other film company in the world. You could say, be it Amblin or Lionsgate or, you know, like whatever. And a lot of them people would recognize as film companies, but not all of them elicit an emotional reaction like the Disney company will out of somebody. I mean, like, you know, like even your most basis layman knows what a Disney movie is. But the weird thing about it is it's kind of hard to, I mean, how do you describe a Disney movie? Like when you say a Disney movie, when you think that, what comes to mind for you, Ethan?
You know, well, when you say Disney, the first thing that obviously comes to mind is the animation. But I mean, they've done so much other stuff. They're responsible for a lot. When I was looking around at Disney movies, you know, movies done by Walt Disney Pictures, and I'm talking the movies I was thinking of and looking at were ones that had the castle logo to it. It's not not necessarily something that was done by another studio, released by them, that sort of thing. Because I mean, as hard as I might think, you know, like technically National Treasure was a Walt Disney movie, but it doesn't compute with that.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean, John Carter.
Yeah, you know. When I was growing up, what a Disney movie was to me was because we had the Disney Channel back in the day, and it had no commercials. Yeah. And it was things like The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes and Flubber and you know, Son of Flubber and things like that. And The Ugly Dachshund and things so that you'd get, Parent Trap, those sort of Mary Poppins.
Herbie the Love Bug.
Yeah, you know. But then you also had the animated stuff, you know, and really you know, when you're talking the animation, obviously they're pioneers in it, with Snow White being the first feature-length animated film, you know. And I looked
that up. Do you know that came out, 1937?
Yeah.
Good. I didn't know it was that. I mean,
well,
I know it was
that's,
old.
That's the other thing is their movies are so – their animated movies specifically are very timeless. You know, it's you don't realize that Bambi was done in the 1940s. You don't realize that that Sleeping Beauty was done in the 50s or 60s. I can't remember now, but late
50s. 57.
And because you watch them as a kid, because it's a staple of childhood. It's a staple of with us growing up, the staple of having those oversized clamshell video cassettes tapes, know? That was the Disney movie thing. And it was like, oh, that's a Disney, because I remember specifically those big white clamshell ones, you know?
Yeah, I remember that too. I mean, they had a little bit of extra cushion. I think they knew the kids were going to get a hold of them and throw them around.
Chew on them.
Oh yeah,
color on them, sit on them, et cetera, et cetera.
But. Oh yeah, then you know. But you're right; they are a staple of childhood. But I don't know. I mean, like again, you know, we can sit here and say, yeah, the you know, animated. But to you, like, what's different about a Disney movie than say a DreamWorks movie? Just off the top of my head, or Ralph Bakshi. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, what is it that makes it different to you?
It's gonna sound it's gonna sound cliched. It's gonna sound cheesy, but it's magic. You know, it's that. Yeah. I guess it's that little bit of fairy dust at the end that Disney manages to add to it. It's just a flavor that they have. It's just some sort of ambiance, some sort of little spice they put on there that just makes it a Disney movie. Mm-hmm. I can't put my finger on it to say exactly what it is, but you can tell that this say, hey, this movie is a Disney movie, and I think they've managed to lose that over the years, especially in the last 10, 15 years, they've managed to lose.
Well,
that.
I mean, we'll talk about that when we get movies. Some of them, absolutely, like Home on the Range, is total shit.
Yeah,
but you know, like sometimes they do well, and you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but there is, but yeah, even though like Disney and Pixar are, you know, under the same umbrella, I mean, they are distinctly different movies, distinctly different kinds of movies. And I'm not even talking just computer animation.
Right.
I'm not even talking, because it's not going to be on my list, but like Tangled would be considered a Disney animated movie, but not a Pixar movie, but it's computer animated.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, first off, a lot of the times, not all the times, but a lot of times, it's a retooling of a classic story.
Yeah.
You know, like a classic fairy tale, be it, you know, Snow White or Cinderella or whatever. I don't know. And they do just have a timeless nature to them. And but like a lot of these movies, like, you know, Toy Story or especially Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. and stuff like that, they are more updated. But they do have that thing to where, as much as I love them, I can see them getting dated. I mean, like, even, like, looking at the first Toy Story versus the third, there's a difference in the animation. And, you know, the animation is still fantastic in the first one, but you got that. And then you're going to be dealing with contemporary issues with, like, you know, clothing and toys and, you know, pop culture references and stuff like that. And you don't, for the most part, you don't have any of that nonsense in Disney. And so, you know, that's one of the things about it is, you know, Ethan's going to be showing Aria these movies, and Aria's going to be showing her kids these movies, and that's what's so cool about them. I do feel confident that Disney is not going to go anywhere. These movies aren't going to go anywhere, but I do think that, I wouldn't imagine that Toy Story would, but I think that Disney has a longer shelf life for sure. And I think you're right. It is that magic, and it is that fairy dust. So we're just going to have to see what happens. Now, why did you decide that when I don't know if put it up to a vote, but when we started talking, why did you decide to allow live action into this?
Really, it's not the only animation isn't the only thing that they've done. And right. When I'm remembering Disney and you know my growing up with it, it wasn't all just me sitting there and loving the animated stuff. I mean, one of my favorite things that can't show up on this because it's a TV series was the old Guy Williams 1950s Zorro TV series. I used to watch that all the time. I loved that show, and I remember my days watching the Disney Channel. And there was your mix of, yes, you had your cartoons, but you also had these live action movies, and these live action movies gave birth to you know actors like Kurt fucking Russell and Kurt Cameron. That
actually,
too.
He did get his start in Disney, but I meant Russell. But yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things that we have this studio that honed and brought these, you know, Jodie Foster, that's another one. That brought these actors to us
Lindsay Lohan
brought these actors to us that have gone on to do other sometimes great and sometimes Oscar winning performances, you know. And,
oh sure.
It's hard to think of you know Kurt fucking Russell. It's like now and not think of Snake Plissken, not think of Stuntman Mike, and then look back into the 1960s and 70s and watch the computer wore tennis shoes and be like, shit, that was him. And, and it was jobs like that and the training like that that gave them the that basically got them where they were, got them the jobs that they needed and whatnot. And you know, too many times you have these child actors that don't go anywhere. And a lot of the ones that Disney had, they spotted that talent and they cultivated it, and you got great people. And just how unapologetically fun the Disney stuff tended to be, you know. It was a childhood trope. It was something that you did. It was Sesame Street and it was Disney.
Oh yeah.
You know. Walt Disney grew up, you know, here in Kansas City. He's from here. Actually, the college I went to, the mascot was designed by Walt Disney. So it's a fun little tie there, and I think a lot of people, a lot of kids now don't know who Walt Disney was, you know?
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, and he died in, God, the late 50s?
Oh, yeah.
Early, I mean, he's been gone a long time, but, you know, it's really cool to see that impact. You know, I mean, so far, I mean, they've held up, like, the pedigree of the brand and the pedigree of the company. And, you know, there's been, you know, some of my favorite Disney movies came out after the death of Walt Disney.
Yeah, he died in 1966.
Okay, so he's a little later than I thought, but he's been dead a long fucking time.
But, you know, and we grew up in the 80s, and yet we knew who he was. We know his face.
He was still on The Wonderful World of Disney.
Yeah.
Well, like the repeats. But, you know, now you watch, you know, the Disney Channel and it's stuff like, you know, Jesse or you know, the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. I don't even know, but it's stuff like that. It's not like that timeless, you know, stuff that, you know, that our parents grew up with, and, you know, now our kids would be like, oh, my parents grew up with that, and I kind of miss that. I mean, it's you know, all get off my lawn, but, yeah, I do think that's a part of childhood that I'd like to see still there. Now, as far as what I said before, when I was asking Ethan about, you know, live action versus animated, I guess to explain it best for me would be, I think probably not for the first time in this world, I'm going to compare Walt Disney to porn. Okay? There's that old saying that goes that I cannot define pornography, but I know it when I see it. And it's the same thing with Walt Disney. I can't define Walt Disney, but I know it when I see it. And it doesn't have to be animated. I mean, and granted, a majority of my list is made up of the animated because I'm a huge fan of the animated stuff. But there is other stuff, and there's some of them because it's because of the live action features versus the animated is why I made my list. And I love Walt Disney, and also we know that, you know, the Walt Disney Company is now taking over the Star Wars franchise. Good stuff should come from that, so it'd be good stuff.
Well, you know, you think about it, and a lot of the things that we love are owned by Disney now. You know, it's Star Wars, Marvel Comics, and Muppets. Yeah. There are three things that they own that are just, you know, huge parts of our lives.
Oh yeah, it should be. It's nuts. But it's a great company, and you know, they own all those properties and all that stuff. But you know, their own, you know, the Mouse brand, the Disney brand, they still have great stuff in their own right, also beyond being the owner of fantastic properties. So should be good. So what do you say, Ethan? You want to get moving? Do you want to name off the most magical list on Earth and go down this list and see what we came up with?
I think so.
All right, Ethan. What is your number six favorite Disney movie?
My number six favorite Disney movie. You know, sitting down here and doing this list, this one edged out one of my all-time favorites to make it into my top six. It's the very recent one. It's the most recent one on here, the 2012 John Carter. I loved this movie.
It's a good movie.
It's one of those things. About every year or so, one or two movies come out that are just, you know, completely underrated, and people take a big shit on it. And this was one of them. And it was. It's a movie that's got a very loyal following, and it's John Carter. It's a great film. It's a lot of fun. It's entertaining. I think a really great adaptation of the stories, and it had that a great adventure feel to it. It had really. It's what you wanted to get out of something like Prince of Persia. You know, so you wanted that fun action and that, but lighthearted but not stupid.
Was a Disney movie, right?
That was a Disney movie, and it was a terrible piece of. Go watch our reviews on it and see how much we loved that piece of crap. But John Carter was really good, and I've been wanting to watch it recently, and Beth hasn't seen it yet, and it was a lot of fun, and it was
streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, well, I own the Blu-ray anyway, but. Good stuff, though. I mean, not too much more to say about it beyond that. I mean, Mark Strong's in it. I mean, come on. Have you seen it?
Yep. Hey, you gotta love Mark Strong. Hey, hang on just a second. I'll be right back.
Sure.
I love it. I don't love it, but I really liked it. I do think that it was one of those movies that got, like, shit on really bad. And it was, like, one of those movies to where I thought it was good. I thought it was, I think... And we have talked about this one because we both felt that it the people gave it an unfair shake, basically because it wasn't the greatest movie ever, but it was by no stretch of the imagination is a bad movie. And we also were not, you know, as much as we're praising the Disney Company right now, we weren't very thrilled with the Walt Disney Company's treatment of this movie, because if you remember right, they had given up on this movie. Oh, I would say what was it 10 days after it came out, and like. Because they spent like however much it was on it, and it was fine, but it just didn't earn a whole hell of a lot of money. It earned money, but it wasn't like a big success. And they'd given up on it. It was really short into it because they were all like, you know, I'm trying to remember the wording. They said something like, you know, this movie, you know, it's a loss. And then they said it like. Really soon after it came out, and it was still in the theater. I think it. I don't
don't remember if it opened number one or if it didn't, but I do know, like, whatever it did, it didn't do great, but, you know, they just spent too much money on it. And I did like it. I like the pulp feel of it. I like the Taylor Kitsch in it. I love the production design. I thought it was a gorgeous movie. And fucking Mark Strong. You know, you gotta love him, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, yeah, I like that one. I like that one quite a bit. I like that one quite a bit. Okay. All right, moving on to my number six. My number six is one that I can tell you right now our lists are going to be different because, you know, I like John Carter. I thought of John Carter, but it wasn't really the kind of movie I wanted to have on my list. But for my number six, I went with, I don't know what year it was, but it's one of the classics. It's Cinderella. Now, I like Cinderella and don't get me wrong, lots of Disney movies I like for lots of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that I like specifically for this supporting cast. And I love the fairy godmothers. I loved the evil stepmother. Was that evil? What do they call her? Is it evil stepmother?
Wicked stepmother, yes.
The wicked stepmother and the bitch sisters, whatever they called them, and the mice. And a big one for me is I loved the cat. I loved Lucifer. And I loved Lucifer because he reminds me of Poof. My cat Poof, my big fat Poof. He reminds me of him, just like a big fat evil cat with like... No, I like that one, and it's old, and, you know, obviously it's classic. Everybody knows the story of Cinderella and something about, you know, the going to the ball and losing the slipper and the enchanted carriage and the fairy godmothers. And I really specifically like the supporting cast in that one. So mm-hmm. I picked that as my number six. I like it a lot. I like it a hell of a lot. So there you go.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Cinderella is not one of my personal favorites.
I like it because it's got Poof in it, pretty
sure.
much.
Sure, but it is that one of those things, and a lot of my memories are colored by things like The Wonderful World of Disney, where they show little segments of
sure.
it, you know. So I mean, like, I think it was many, many years that I never saw the whole movie. You know, I just saw bits and pieces, and uh-huh. I really liked the mice. You know, the mice were a lot of fun in that one. But it's a great little Disney film, and it's certainly withstood the test of time. And so it's a good one.
It's like it's funny. It's fun to think about the Wonderful World of Disney movies, and you know, like all that stuff on TV. Like you just said, you saw bits and pieces of it. I do know that, like, you know, I grew up, you know, watching all this stuff, and I swear to God, I was an adult. I mean, I was early 20s before I saw a uncut version of Alice in Wonderland. I mean, mm-hmm. I was an adult. You know, I was, you know, probably married the first time I saw the scene with Tweedledee and Tweedledum because of the Wonderful World of Disney ones. You know, I mean, what would you call it? A byproduct of watching this stuff on television, because a lot of times they do edit it for time. And yeah, so that was a thing. That was a thing. Okay. Alrighty. How about your number five, Ethan?
All right, my number five. This gets more into the vein of what Disney really is to me, and it's my number five is probably high on your list. It's the 1994 Lion King.
Fucking love that movie. You know it.
It's a great one. I am actually ordering it right now on Walmart.com. So
I got the 3D Blu-ray. Yeah, I bought that shit the day it came out. I went and saw it in the 3D theaters. It was amazing. And I saw it on the opening night in the theater when it came out.
Uh-huh.
That's how old I am. This is a...
Oh, yeah, so did I. I remember seeing it in theaters.
Except for John Carter, this is the first one that we were older than. And, you know, John Carter... Yeah, this is a great one. You know, I love this one. This one shows up on a lot of my lists. So cool.
Yeah, it's a great film. You know, I mean, talk about an iconic movie, and what sort of endeared. It's one of those movies that endeared an actor to us without ever seeing him. And it was Jeremy Irons. And it's like immediately from this performance, we're like, oh, he's a fantastic villain. We love him. And then he goes into Dungeons and Dragons. We're like, wait, maybe you should do voice work.
There's also Die Hard, and there was Reversal of Fortune. And I loved him in the frickin' the Man in the Iron Mask. I mean, he was the musketeer with the evil bent that was actually, you know, started up the I love the Lion King. And Talking about a voice cast. Want to talk about a voice cast in a movie?
Oh, yeah.
Good God. You just nailed one. Yeah, Jeremy Irons. Okay, cool. But you also had James Earl Jones. You had Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Mm-hmm. You had Matthew Broderick.
Yep.
You had Nathan Lane. I don't remember the name of the guy that played Pumbaa, but you had Robert Guillaume, who played Rafiki. You had, I mean, it's just a huge, Cheech Marin, Whoopi Goldberg. It's just a huge list. I mean, it's a fantastic.
Definitely one of those. One of those things that is just went so far as having these having this great great voice cast. I mean, so much more than I think any of their movies up until then, and even beyond then, is this movie was packed with these great names, but not only great names, but great actors that were right for the part. You know, and I say, you know, in the 90s, Disney hit a peak and then went down, and for me, The Lion King was the peak in the 1990s for them, and because following that up was Pocahontas, and you know, say what you will about it, people, I mean, that was not that great of a movie, but it had the problem of coming out after The Lion King.
It did.
And really,
but there was also Mulan, and Mulan was fantastic. And
it was. But this movie did the thing of setting a Disney benchmark in that most things after that people went, well, it's good, but it's not as good as Lion King. It took another company, Pixar, to come in and put a new benchmark with like Toy Story, for people to go, oh, hey, this is Toy Story. But it's, you know, it's an amazing film. I love The Lion King. It's great. It's got great symbolism. It's a beautiful film. Absolutely beautiful.
It's a retelling of Hamlet with cats. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. No, I love that movie. It's a good choice. Good choice. Moving on, my number five. My number five is kind of in a weird place for me because I couldn't decide where to put it. Because, you know, in all honesty, I've said it a million times that a lot of the times I make these lists based off of, you know, what, two things basically. What I anticipate Ethan's going to do sometimes, but sometimes I just try to take him back, like Unforgiven, shit like that. But a lot of the times I also, you know, like want to put him in a place to where I'm just at least talking about him. And my number six is, and honestly it'd be lower. You know, by lower I mean like, you know, like maybe my number eight or number nine or something like that, but it's maybe I don't remember what year, but it's Aladdin. The that was one that came out like when I was a kid.
Yeah,
I don't know about the kid. I think it came out when I was, I don't know, 11, 12, something like that. Liked it, loved it. You know, watched it a lot as a kid. Now, I don't know how much snooping you've been doing on it, or if any that you ended up doing on thatguyatheglasses.com, but there is one of the shows on there called The Nostalgia Chick, and one of the things that she talks about a lot is as Disney movies, animated movies, and stuff like that. And she's got this great video on there. I can't remember which one it was, or I'd tell you to watch it, but she's talking about the difference between like a DreamWorks movie and a Disney movie, basically, the main difference is like a Disney movie is a retelling of a classic story and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And
right.
they say, that's what it is. Like, you know, like the strength of the movie is based off the classic story. A DreamWorks movie is a movie that's based off of, that is entirely built around voice talent. You know, you look at something like, you know, Shrek, or you look at something like, you know, what's another DreamWorks movie? Kung Fu Panda. You know, you got like, you know, Jack Black and you got Mike Myers and, so basically, they're built around they're built around personality. And she makes this great argument that although it's made by Disney, in a lot of ways, Aladdin is the first DreamWorks movie because that movie is entirely built around Robin Williams' performance as the genie. And don't get me wrong, it's fantastic. It's a lot of fun to watch and all that stuff. And it does have some of those things about it that kind of drive me nuts. You know, like the stuff that'll date a movie. You know, like like the stuff that isn't timeless. But I love the movie. You know, I mean, it has, you know, I still to this day remember the, and it hasn't been that long since I've seen it, but I'll always remember the carpet ride in the volcano and like that computer animated carpet moving across it. And it had that, it had great songs in it. And again, you know, yeah, it did have Robin Williams as a genie and that was fantastic, but, you know, beyond that, it had a very Lion King-esque, cast beyond that, and it is a good movie, and it's one that came out when I was a kid, and I watched it a shitload when I was a kid, and I like it a lot. So I just wanted to bring it up because I wanted to bring up that point about how the Nostalgia Chick, calls it the first ever DreamWorks movie, and granted it's not, but I get her point, and it's just an interesting theory. So, yep, that's my number five.
Nice. Well, my number four going into this is, at its core, one of my absolute favorite movies when I was a kid. And I'm dying to actually pick it up, you know, see if it's on Netflix, see if it's on Amazon Plus or Amazon Prime or Hulu Plus, whatever. I want to watch it again. It is the 1971 movie Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Oh, yeah.
With Angela Lansbury.
There you go.
Triguna Mocoides Trichorum Satis D. You know, I remember watching this movie as a kid and immediately thinking along the lines of, man, come on, you have magic animating these suits of armor, and they're kicking the crap out of Nazis. Even as a small child, I knew that was cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I haven't seen that. I probably haven't seen that one since I was a kid. I remember virtually nothing about that one. Is that the one where they're flying around in the magic bed?
Yes.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. I haven't seen that in a long ass time, but yeah.
It's a fantastic movie. It is. It is not on Blu-ray. It is out on DVD. But it's just amazing. No, it's not in the vault. It's still available, according to what I'm looking at here. But it's one of those forgotten movies that never really got put out there. But it's based on a kid's book, you know, called Bedknob and Broomstick.
Yeah,
And it's all about this old. I'm going off of memory of many years, but. Angela Lansbury plays a witch, and she, for some reason, it's during World War II, and these kids are relocated because of the Blitz, I think, or because of relocation for the war effort, and she has to take care of them. And in order to entertain them and whatnot, they discover she has magic, and she takes them on these grand little adventures, and there's animation in it, and there's all this great stuff, and it's just a ton of fun. It's from that vein of like Mary Poppins, you know.
There you go.
Absolutely wonderful, just fun movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it's been so long since I've seen it, I can't comment. Maybe I'll watch it and I'll bring it up at some point on the podcast in the future. Okay, my number four. Hey, remember back in the day when I used to do all my cop-outs, but I've been a lot better about it lately? My number four might be considered a cop-out, I don't know, but it's not a tie or anything stupid like that. Mm-hmm. But it's one that I don't know if it was made by the Walt Disney Company or if it was bought by the Walt Disney Company, but I do know it's a movie that goes into the fucking vault, and that's part of the Walt Disney movie experience.
Yeah.
Is not being able to find that damn movie you want to see because...
It's not being able to see that movie for 10 or 15 fucking years.
Yeah,
it's one fucking thing I want to, like, bitch slap all the Disney Channel for.
Yeah.
And it's like... And I'm just like going, now don't do that shit with those Marvel movies, you bastards.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those genius things out there that they do.
It's genius. It builds supply and demand. That's goddamn annoying. But I don't remember the year, but it was when I was a kid. It's Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Touchstone.
But it is owned by Disney. It is owned by Disney now because it did go into the fucking vault. And it was directed by Robert Zemeckis. And I think this is like kind of like that exemplary one for me of the whole idea behind, you know, I don't know a Disney movie, but I can't explain it, but I know it when I see it. And, you know, maybe Disney saw, hey, Touchstone made a Disney movie, so I'm going to buy it. But and it is owned by Walt Disney now. Am I incorrect? Because I know it went in the vault. Because I went to go buy it one time and found out it was in the vault. I'm like, I didn't even know it was Disney.
It might have been in the vault, but it was re-released this year.
Yeah, I know that. I bought it. And it's also on Netflix, last I checked.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, like my porn Disney comparison, you know, I don't know a Disney movie. I don't know how to explain it to you, but I know it when I see it. Yeah, this one just smacks of Disney. And, you know, obviously it's got your Disney characters in it, but it's also got that neat angle of also having the Warner Brothers characters in it. And that was badass as far as I was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I kind of look at the movie and I kind of like how there's the live action and it's you know, the quote-unquote, you know, the gritty, cold, you know, real world with you know, circumstances and consequences, and then you have mm-hmm. the animated world, and, you know, there's just, like, this fun, like, clean divide between the two, and, you know, you have, you know, Eddie Valiant, who's an alcoholic, who's, you know, his brother was murdered by a toon, and he's like a gumshoe detective, and, you know, blah, 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 and then he's running around with fucking Roger Rabbit, which... But yeah, it's Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I think it came out in 1988, 1989. Ethan says it's Touchstone, but I do know that it's one of those ones that goes in the damn vault, and happily it is, you know, it has been re-released on Blu-ray, and it's on Netflix and Happy Day and stuff like that. Okay, but as far as that's concerned, like I said, I mean, it's, you know, like the Disney porn comparison goes, I don't know a Disney movie. I can't explain to you what a Disney movie is, but I know what mm-hmm. it is when I see it, and Roger Rabbit is a friggin' Disney movie, you know, because of the whole thing. And what I like about it is I like the clean divide between the real world and the animated world. And by that, I mean that, you know, Eddie Valiant is a, you know, he's an alcoholic. You know, his brother was murdered by a toon. How, you know, he's always hanging out at bars, and he's not paying his bills, and he's bumming cigarettes from kids, and, like, stealing a ride on the trolley, and just good stuff like that. And then you have, you know, Toontown, where everything's like a pumped up, turned up to 11 car mm-hmm. toon.
You had Mickey Mouse on screen with Bugs Bunny. I mean,
how cool is that?
That is awesome, and you would never ever get that today. That would never happen today.
No, we can't even get Spider-Man and Captain America on the same screen. And good God, you know, they are the same company. Other than like the distribution company, the production company. That was the cool thing about it. And I don't know. I mean, I don't, maybe this is a dubious choice for this list, but when I think of Disney movies, this one comes to mind. And did I get into my whole thing about how, have I gotten into my whole thing about how if I go to think about animated characters, Roger Rabbit does not spring immediately to mind because of that whole thing with like the clear divide between the animated world and the real world. I mean, I'll think, you know, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Bugs Bunny and Wile E. Coyote, and it would take a while before I got to Roger Rabbit, and I think that's a testimony to this movie. But I do kind of like the whole difference between the grown-up mm-hmm. world and the kids' world in that movie, and just kind of how they bleed over into each other. Now, it might be a dubious choice to put on this list, but you love this movie too, right?
I do. It's a good one. Okay. It is a fantastic one. I mean, I remember seeing this movie in theaters and being absolutely terrified mm-hmm. by Judge Doom Christopher Lloyd. You know, it's one of those movies that I'm very fond of. And I had the computer game on the Commodore 64.
Oh, God. I remember that.
It was a great gumshoe thing. I remember later on, many years later, when I found out that Bob Hoskins was actually English, my mind was blown.
Very much, very, very English. I mean, he speaks with a Cockney accent. I showed it to Chloe not too long ago, and she was all bummed out when Judge Doom drops the cartoon shoe in the dip. And I remember when I was a kid being all bummed out about that too. So I mean, it's a
pretty intense movie, you know. I mean, it works on great on different levels, and it's just it's beautiful movie.
I love it.
It's great.
Good choice for me. Okay, yes. Moving on. What is your number, whatever number we're on?
My number three is the 1991 film The Rocketeer.
I knew that was going to show up on your list.
You know, it's not one that I immediately thought of when I was like, oh, no, Disney movies. And then I saw it was on the Disney list. I was like, fuck yeah, I love The Rocketeer. It's awesome.
There you go.
I mean, I was the guy who went home and after seeing this movie and fashioned my own rocket pack so I could run around and play as The Rocketeer, you know.
Oh, there you go. That's a fantastic movie, though.
You know, it's a great movie. And, you know, just mentioned Captain America, same director.
There you go.
Johnston. Great, great, fun, you know, pulpish comic book, great movie. I mean, it's pretty much it was one of those movies that came around because of the success of Batman. Mm-hmm. But it had a very, very different feel than Batman. It was much more lighthearted. It was much more pulp, much more of an adventure film.
But it's also much more timeless.
Yeah.
I can watch The Rocketeer now, and it doesn't occur to me the second I start watching it what decade it came out.
Yeah, that it's 22 years old.
I watch Batman, and I know 5 minutes into it that I'm watching a movie
from the late 80s.
Yeah, I mean, you know that immediately.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. And The Rocketeer is easily one of my favorite just fun adventure flicks. And it's got great heroism. It's got great comedy. And it's just a wonderful movie. You got the drop-dead gorgeous Jennifer Connelly in there, who is just absolutely beautiful in this one. Great styling of the 1930s, and you get
Timothy Dalton was the bad guy in it, right?
Timothy Dalton was the bad guy. He was essentially playing a characterization of Errol Flynn, because there were rumors flying around that Errol Flynn was a Nazi spy. And this was like, okay, we're going to take that and run with it. And what if this dude was like Errol Flynn and was a Nazi spy? And it's just, you can just have so much fun with it. And Timothy Dalton is just so slick and great at just being a little, just evil in this movie. It's very
Bill Campbell.
Billy Campbell as the Rocketeer, and just a wonderful film. And anyone who
holy
hasn't
shit,
seen it needs
you
to
you
know
see what.
It.
Alan Arkin was that guy. Yep. Was the I just now realized
was,
I just thought about that.
Peavy,
wow.
Yeah, was Peavy.
Yeah,
yep,
he's
yep.
the guy that did he build it?
No, oh. no, he modified it. He was one of the guys who found it and modified it, developed the helmet, the engineer for the plane, that sort of thing. And it's a great movie. I mean, if you have not seen it, just go find it and watch it. It's so wonderful.
It's so weird when that happens, you know, a movie that you're just really familiar with and maybe you're not versed in lately, and you watch, you're like, holy shit, that's that guy. That just happened to me with Alan Arkin. It just, I mean, I haven't seen it in, God, maybe 10 years, maybe less.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while. Okay, moving on to my number three. My number three is, I don't know if, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not particularly weird. Because, you know, it's in par with my list and everything that I'm going on so far. But I'm grabbing another animated one, one that came out in my childhood. But it's one that I'm going to talk specifically to the quality of the movie itself. And maybe we'll call this a little bit of penance, because I chose the, I don't remember what year it was, maybe 1989, but The Little Mermaid. Okay?
Yep.
Now, I chose The Little Mermaid because The Little Mermaid came out when Ethan and I were 8, 9, 10, something like that. That weird little gray area for boys. If you're not a boy, haven't had a boy, haven't been around a boy, there's at least this boy. Growing up, there was like this tiny little gray area that happens to where you're too cool for cartoons, and, you want everything to be, you know, guns blowing up and this and that and so on and so forth, and you don't necessarily like movies about girls and stuff like that. So I saw The Little Mermaid when I was a kid, and if you asked me when I was a kid, I would say, you know, out of all the movies I've ever seen, this was one of them. But, you know, whatever. You know, I saw it, and, you know, it was a movie, okay? And then I saw this movie as an adult. I saw it, I don't remember, like, when it was released on DVD, it was probably, I don't know, 2003, 2004, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was floored at how good that movie was.
Mm-hmm.
It is a remarkably well-made movie. It has a fantastic story. It has terrifying elements in it.
Yeah.
Just terrifying elements in it. Like Ursula, she mm-hmm. was a scary fucking villain.
Well,
it also wasn't a mustache-twisting villain, so
no,
to speak.
No, no. And this was the first... I think this was the start of the... this great era of Disney movies. Now, is this, or I think this one came out just before Beauty and the Beast.
I can never remember which of the two came out first.
They were close, one or the other. But this was also in that great age in the early 90s of our childhood of this great era of Disney films. And this is the first one really that had this huge star power to it, with Robin Williams coming in. You know, because I mean, really, Robin Williams was. Awesome.
Robin Williams is not in the line. He wasn't in The Little Mermaid.
Oh, God. I'm thinking of a lie. I'm an idiot.
Father Brain.
But this movie did just come out on Blu-ray, like this week or last week or something.
Yesterday. I actually meant to buy it. I just flat out forgot about it. I'm going to go pick it up tomorrow after work. But yeah, it's a great one. And the music in it. I mean, there's this thing in almost every single Disney movie where, you know, they have lots of songs in them, but they more or less all sound the same. And not in this one. I mean, you had a wide variety of different kinds of music. You had, You had terrifying, like I said, you have terrifying elements, and it's just a really good movie, and I watched it when I was a kid, and it was a movie, and whatever, and I saw it as an adult, and I thought, you know, I don't remember who, I probably watched it with my niece when she was little, and I was just blown away by how good of a movie it is, and I look forward to buying it, and I'm 34 years old now, and I will walk into that store and proudly buy The Little Mermaid on Blu-ray tomorrow. So it'll be all right. It'll be cool. It'll be cool to see.
Yeah, it's one I'm realizing how much I have to it's my wife there. The Little Mermaid is her favorite hoarder. If you ever go through that movie and watch it and that you know that song where she's talking about all the things she's collecting and all the uh-huh. the cool things, don't put it to music and just look at the lyrics. It makes her a really creepy stalker.
Oh yeah, I know. I've read that crack.com article too. Yes, but it's a good movie. I mean, it's a really, really, mm-hmm. really, really good movie. And
yeah, I haven't. I don't think I've watched it since probably the late '90s.
Well, it is. I mean, it's really good. I mean, I was very surprised at how much I liked it. And, you know, like a lot of these movies, I'll watch with like a whimsical smirk on my face. You know, mm-hmm. like you know. Pining for the nostalgic days past, but this is one that I watched. You know, I tried to watch it with that same smirk on my face, I just couldn't get past just like the quality and how good of a movie it was. So I'm gonna go buy it probably and watch it again because it's a good movie.
Okay, it is.
So,
it is.
Number two, Ethan.
Talking about a good movie, this is absolutely one of my favorite movies. It's the 1963 Sword in the Stone. If for anything, the wizard's duel scene, the duel between Merlin and the uh-huh. witch, you know, this movie is absolutely wonderful. Just thinking about it makes me smile.
It's funny that a lot of people say what you just said about, if nothing else, just for the wizard duel alone, and okay, but it's just a good movie. You know, I mean, ignore the, you know, just the wizard's duel alone. Yeah, I mean, it's a great scene, but it's a great scene in a really good movie. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great one.
Yeah, well, it's got so much more to it. It's another one of those that you saw a lot of bits and pieces of in the in like on the Disney Channel here and there, where they just show the wizard's duel. They show the dueling fairy godmothers that are, you know, keep changing the color of the dress. It's such a great movie. It's so wonderful. It's so beautiful. And actually the fairy godmothers there in Sleeping Beauty, aren't they? I'm getting those mixed up again. It's getting late. Sword in the Stone, great film. Remember the sequence where they're running around as fish, and I remember the only thing I hated about this movie was that it ended. You know, was that it's, and then it's ended, and then he flies off to Bermuda, and then he comes back, and you're just like, I want it to keep going. And so love the Sword in the Stone. It's a great flick.
Oh yeah, good one. Again, it's not on my list, and I don't really know why. Maybe if I were to redo it right now, it'd be on there. But I love that one. I don't think it occurred to me though. But I do love that one. That is something I've heard a lot of people like you and I say. If nothing else, for the wizard duel alone, it's cool. I mean, well, yeah, but it's just a cool movie.
Yeah.
You don't need to justify it. It is a good movie, and so yeah, good one. Okay, getting on to my number two. If I were a film professor and I had to pick a movie to teach Walt Disney about, I would actually pick my number two choice. I think it is probably the best Disney movie. I think it is the most iconic. I think it is the most typical. I think it is the most, you know, I mean, it's the one that hits all the notes. It's a wonderful movie. It's not my favorite, but it's a great movie. But I do love it. I love it a lot. It's Sleeping Beauty. I love Sleeping Beauty. I mean, it's such a good movie. I mean, break it down. First off, just get it out of the way, Maleficent.
Yeah, this
Jesus
movie.
Christ.
This movie barely didn't make my list. I mean, I swear,
it's
number 11. Just barely. It is a great film. And you're right, Maleficent. It's all Maleficent. You know.
But
any of the other villains in the Disney movies at least have some sort of quality that you're like, hey, I like to watch this guy. You know, it's like, or Maleficent, you're scared of her. There's no point where she's on screen where you're like, I love her. It's like, she's nasty and evil. And
she certainly isn't sympathetic, is she?
Oh, no. Like, good Lord.
No. I mean, she puts her in that frickin', she puts her in the spell because she didn't invite her to the party. Is that right?
Pretty much.
Because she didn't invite her to the party, she did the spinning wheel thing, pricked her finger, and she went into the sleep and all that kind of cool shit. You got that going for it. But, you know, yeah, absolutely. Maleficent, you know, fantastic, wonderful villain. A lot of the times, like, when we've talked about, you know, things that are iconic, we'll talk about, you know, like, say, the Wicked Witch of the West. Mm-hmm. If you go to Halloween Town and you buy a witch costume, it is, you know, it's based off of Margaret Hamilton's Wicked Witch of the West. Mm-hmm. The same thing can be said in a broader degree about Prince Charming. Because, like, when a little girl says, you know, like, I'm going to grow up and find the most perfect man, he's going to be my Prince Charming. And, you know, it's a huge thing. And it's kind of interesting to me that you watch that movie and you think about that movie. And you have, is that the Fairy Godmother's one? Yeah.
Yes.
You got your Fairy Godmother's again. This is another one that's entirely made up by a badass supporting cast. You got that. You got Maleficent. You've got Prince Charming, and you got all that cool shit going on. And the main character of the movie, A, nobody can ever remember her name, but for the record, it's Aurora. But and B, she sleeps through the whole movie. I mean, she doesn't, but you know, she sleeps through most of the movie, and it's a wonderful movie. I mean, to me, it is everything that a Disney movie needs to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a larger than life, absolutely no bones about it, non-sympathetic villain. You have your perfect, you know, dyed in the wool Prince Charming character. So charming that his name is Prince Charming, I guess. And you have your otherworldly, you know, elements like the magic, and you have the fairy godmothers, and you have all that kind of stuff, and you also have there's always that weird element in a fairy tale to where you just kind of have to move past it, because if you dwell on it too much, your brain's going to bleed. But it's the whole thing about how Maleficent put her to sleep by her pricking her finger on a spinning wheel. Mm-hmm. You're like, what the fuck? What? I don't care. She's sleeping now. Moving on. It's a wonderful movie, and I think it's kind of exemplary of what Walt Disney is.
Yeah.
What Walt Disney movies are, and it was wonderful. I love this one. This is another one that I own, and I do watch it, and I'm not ashamed of it. I don't care. It's a really good movie.
Mm-hmm. That's a great movie, and it's one I'm quickly realizing I need to stock up on Disney movies because obviously I have a little girl.
If you need to borrow any, and you know, maybe do things with them.
Yeah.
That can be done. I have I think I have everyone I've listed off to you.
Excellent.
So far.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Well, I know one of the things we'll be asking for Christmas from various family members. Be like, we need to stock up on Disney movies.
Disney movies.
So I think I've only got, like, animated wise, I think I've only got Beauty and the Beast, and now Lion King. I just ordered it, but
I got that one. I got Sleeping Beauty. I got Cinderella. I got Snow White. I got a lot of these.
All right. Going into my number one, it is not an animated movie. Meaning, Sword in the Stone is my favorite animated Disney film.
I'm surprised, Heath.
I could not do this without doing this, and it ended up at number one. It's the 1981 Tron.
Okay, fine, but pause real quick.
Okay.
All right, pause real quick. That's fine, but I completely anticipated your number one being The Great Mouse Detective.
It's one of my favorites. It's actually on my list, but it's number 10.
I can't believe it's that low, but okay, Tron. All right, I know you love yourself some fucking.
I do. You know, kids were running around playing, playing Superman, doing that thing. I was running around playing as Tron. I remember vividly seeing this movie when I was, you know, obviously I was only a year and a half when this came out, a year and a half old when this came out. But I remember watching it all the time when I was a kid and thinking it was the most awesome, epic thing ever. It was really cool. Of course, you know, when I was, blue is my favorite color. There's lots of blue in this movie.
Hey.
But Tron just had a great heroism. It's very much a hero story of the digital generation, of our generation growing up. And you have this great integration of computers, and you have this cool adventure, and you have obviously Academy Award winner Jeff Bridges is in there.
There you go.
And you know, it's one of those examples to me of Disney being this innovative monster machine, because they put this out. They're like, okay, let's try to do it. Boom. Oh, hey, look, Tron did awesome. And then they waited, you know, another 25 years before they did another one. I really thoroughly enjoy this movie. It has such a soft spot in my heart for it. But Tron just has this great adventure and this great element to it that just spoke to me as a kid. So it ended up my number one. So
yeah, I mean, I like Tron.
I think I've seen it twice.
Rachel Gould's in it.
Yeah. David Warner.
David Warner, good old David Warner. He was also the voice of the MCP.
Master Control Program. End of line.
End of line, yeah. It's a good movie. I think I watched it like right before Tron Legacy, and I think I'd seen it a couple times as a kid or whatever, but yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. I think I'm still reeling from the fact that Great Mouse Detective isn't your number one, because that was like one of those things that built my list around. I thought you loved that movie, but
I do like that movie. I
thought you like really, 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 no. really loved the hell out of it, but maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. But you know, cool. Okay. Right on.
Well, what's your number one then?
Well, obviously number one, academically, like I just said, if I taught a Disney class, it would be Sleeping Beauty. My number one is obviously The Lion King.
Yeah.
It cracked my top six of all time, so I cannot not put it at my number one, my number one favorite Disney movie. This is the movie that, you know, means the most to Snow White, yeah, absolutely is academically the choice. But, nostalgically, The Lion King is the choice for me. I mean, this is a movie that I've often gone over my, quote marks of the year film education, how important movies a movie was to me, like Pulp Fiction. You know, it's the one that taught me to love movies, and the Friday the 13th series taught me about genre distinctions. Mm-hmm. And I think that The Lion King might have been like one of those ones that that kind of like broke me out of that gray zone I was talking about. So I'm like, it's perfectly acceptable to like. To like animated movies, because I think I figured it out, and I think this movie came out when I was 13 or 12 or something like that. So I mean, this wasn't I don't know what nearly falls under your formative years, but this is the one I was watching when I was 5 or 6. This is one that came out a lot way too closer to me losing my virginity than I'd like to admit, but it's a movie that I love. I mean, I absolutely loved, and I still love this movie. Be it everything from the, like when I was talking earlier, to the cast, to the music. I mean, this is another one of those things that you can't get past. You have Elton John doing the music. You have, Howard Shore doing the music. And like I said, it's got the retelling of, Hamlet going on in it, and that's really cool. And it's told with it kind of has the whole, the African, elements to it. And it was also, I don't remember, Ethan, if you remember this, but for a while there, and I think it's gone away because of digital and stuff like that, but there was like this push for a product, and there were a couple of them coming out. It was a VCR that let you self-edit on the fly. And I think they kind of moved past it because you could just skip past something on a DVD. Well, I remember the one that was the big push for everybody was The Lion King, because they wanted their kids to watch The Lion King. They liked The Lion King, but they said that their kids freaked out too much at the death of Mufasa. And that was, and don't get me wrong, it's a heart-wrenching scene, but when you really look at the scene, it isn't that bad. They show him falling, and then they show him dead. That's all there is to it. You don't see him get shot. You don't see him get gutted. You don't see any blood. You don't see anything like that. And that just shows, like, how good the storytelling is. How well they set up that character before that point. How well they sold the vocal performances. How well they cut that scene. It just, it's a remarkable movie. I love that movie, and it's funny, like, you know, like, Chloe will throw in a Disney movie, or hell, I'll throw in a Disney movie, and, you know, like, sometimes, like, the trailers will pop up, and the Lion King trailer will pop up, and I'll be off doing my adult stuff, and I'll hear the music in the background, and it still gives me goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I adore this movie. I adore the characters, the story, the music, everything about it. It's easily my number one on this list, and it's, you know, it's in my top 10 of all time. You know, it is my favorite Disney movie, and it's in my top 10 movies of all time to say, like, how much I love this movie. So that's that, as far as that is concerned. And Rachel wanted to pipe in that her favorite Disney movie of all time is Mulan. And okay, right on. So we got that going on. All right, Ethan, shall we run down our list and stick a fork in this?
That sounds like a plan.
And a half.
Well, starting up my number 10, as I said, it is the number 10 is The Great Mouse Detective from 1986. Love that one. Number 9 is Sky High from 2005. My number 8 is Robin Hood from 1973.
Oh, man, I love that. I wish I had it. I completely forgot about that.
Great movie. Great movie. Yeah. My number 7 is Tron Legacy. Love that one. My number 6 is John Carter. My number 5 is The Lion King. My number 4 is Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Number 3, The Rocketeer. Number 2, Sword in the Stone. And number 1, Tron.
Okay. Well, my number 10 is the last traditionally hand-drawn animated Disney movie. It's The Princess and the Frog. And I say if they never do it again, then it's not a bad note to go out on. It's a good movie. I liked it quite a bit, actually. Then I went with Mary Poppins. Again, I kind of like the live action and animated elements, and I love how much it pisses everybody off how bad Dick Van Dyke's accent was in it. And it's just a fun movie, though. So,
yeah.
You know, I picked that one. And then my number 8 is Beauty and the Beast. I like Beauty and the Beast quite a bit. I think I might have put this on here for basically two reasons. I thought Gaston was a very multifaceted mm-hmm. villain, because, you know, he came across as a goofy dumbass, but at the same time he had a really dark side to him, and I liked that about him. And then you also have the ballroom scene that was fucking incredible. And then I picked number 7, The Great Mouse Detective, and if I'd known that Ethan was going to put that in number 10, I probably would have put it over, probably Aladdin. But anyway, the list I just went over, I had Cinderella, Aladdin, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, The Little Mermaid, Sleeping Beauty, and my number 1 most favorite Disney movie of all time is The Lion King, Hakuna Matata.
Hakuna Matata.
Yes.
Some great Disney films
Hakuna
out there.
Matata.
Yeah, it makes me happy to. I'm gonna have to start my Disney collection. You know,
it gets expensive, dude. Just try to get yourself out of the mine. If it's in the vault, leave it in the vault.
Yeah,
you missed this chance, because if you're trying to get a movie that's in the vault, unfortunately, collectors know what they're doing. And you're like, I remember somebody was trying. I don't remember, but I was trying to find a copy of The Lion King on DVD, I think, and it was over $100 or something, but it was still in the vault, and I'm all like, no way.
Yeah. It's like, I think the only Blu-ray that's made it back in the vault that I'm at least, well, Snow White's back in the vault, so is and Sleeping Beauty is the other one.
Yeah, we got both those.
Sad, but, you know, I'll get Sleeping Beauty at some point.
just let me know, and I can at least loan them to you.
But for your information, Robin Hood is not in the vault. It's still available.
I have that one, too. I love that one. I can't believe I forgot about it. But yeah, that's another one I loved as a kid. Loved that one. I mean, that's kind of the whole thing here. All these movies are magical, and they meant a lot to our childhood. Alrighty, then. So I guess that's going to bring us to an end of this show where we talked about our favorite Disney movies. That was fun. I would love to revisit this in the future, next couple of years, see what Ethan thinks of them after.
Yes, after I've had to view them numerous times.
Yes, I've already been there because I've been through nieces and nephews and now Chloe. So, you know, I know the ones that have the rewatchability, the ones that make me want to rip my head off. And so it'd be good to see. But I don't know what we're doing next time. I mean, hell, next time it might be Red Phone Zone what the hell, fan service? I don't know.
Yeah, not sure yet.
I don't know. It's going to be something. I don't even know when the hell it's going to be. But yeah. Ethan needs to go sleepy by because he needs to wake up in 15 minutes when his daughters start drinking.
Pretty much.
So I guess that's going to bring us to the end of the show. So I'm Aaron.
I'm Ethan.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Aww.
Aww.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide?
I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride.
A whole new world, a new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only dreaming.
A whole new world, a dazzling place I never knew. But when I'm way up here, it's crystal clear, and now I'm in a whole new world with you. Rainstorm and the river are my brothers. The heron and the otter are my friends.
And we are connected to each other
in a circle, in a hoop that never ends. Have you ever heard the wolf cry to the blue corn moon? Or ask the grinning bobcat why he grins? Can you sing with all the voices of a mountain? Can you paint with all the colors of the wind?
The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You think about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you, what more is you looking for?
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day, out in the sun, they slave away, while we devote in full time to floating under the sea. Ever just the same.